Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is August 15th, 2013. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. My theme tonight is boom-bust economy. That's because globally, we are seeing enormous divergence, almost multiple personalities, between the people and areas and industries that are enjoying an economic boom and some that are in recession and depression. I drove from San Francisco to Tennessee in early July, and then from Tennessee to Rhode Island and Connecticut, and back in the last 2 weeks. The areas filled with big ag, oil and gas, digital manufacturing, IT, and biotech are booming. That economy is very strong. Others are bust. Most other places are in recession, particularly if they have no water or natural resources or agriculture. Another way to look at it is in North America, we move $40 trillion out of the legacy systems, that's the financial coup d'etat. We left the union contracts and retirement and healthcare plans back in the legacy systems to fight over the fumes. That includes the retirement and other obligations of municipalities and government programs such as Medicare. That money was pulled out and reinvested in the very high-tech new economy. So on one hand, you have folks who are depending on the legacy systems who are being essentially thrown overboard, arranged through debasement and abrogation, and they think the world is coming to an end. Meantime, the places who are growing rich on the reinvestment think the economy is going gangbuster. They think things are just fine. The whole conversation about this divergence came up again today with Walmart's earnings report this week saying that this is major evidence that the economy is collapsing. Well, it's a combination of things, including the fact that it's August. And of course, things are almost always slow in August. But Walmart's been hurting badly. If you come to the middle of the country and you go, you drive by the Walmarts, it's amazing the extent to which the parking lots are empty. Walmart serves the people being thrown overboard in many places. The people who live on Social Security, disability, welfare, unemployment, a lot of Walmart's revenues come, in fact, from various government programs. Sometimes you feel like you're taking your government voucher down to the government warehouse to pick up your stuff. As the federal government continues to squeeze these folks, including with debasement, but sequestration is going to add to that, these folks really are collapsing and you see it everywhere, not to mention the fact of what happens when it turns out you've been eating genetically modified food for 15 years, which does wonders for your health. So, we saw the poll, I've talked about it before, it was up on the blog. Since 1990, the life expectancy of an American woman my age who does not have a high school degree has decreased 5 years. Men has decreased 3 years. And from what I see going on in the ground in middle America, it's going to keep heading down. So the people being thrown overboard are indeed sinking, but the ship is sailing with a fresh coat of paint, $40 trillion in new capital, and refreshed with the freedom to sail free of the liabilities of the legacy systems. So the bottom line is the good ship USA economy is not drowning. The people being thrown overboard to make sure it's strong are drowning. And that leads us to the $64,000 question, because to engineer the financial coup d'etat, we basically ran a system where particularly government was allowed to basically promote people and turn leadership over to the kind of people who'd be willing to contribute to the financial coup d'etat. And so you have a very politicized group and a very sycophantish group. And the challenge is now that the leadership, the money's free and clear and the leadership appears ready to lower the boom, are we going to swing the pendulum back and return to some semblance of competency in the U.S. government, or just let it keep grinding on the way it's grinding? The reality is, if you're going to depend on force to retain the value of the U.S. dollar, you need a competent military. And that means that the new Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, is indeed in the hot spot. It's the same news from around Europe and Asia. You know, you see this boom-bust parallel around the globe, and part of it is what results from the kind of globalization and centralization of capital that we've seen, and part of it is the technology, of course, the technology facilitating that centralization. If you want more background on this kind of divergence in the economy, the interview I did with Joseph Farrell is very good background for understanding the phenomena. And the one that we'll post next week with Colonel Wilkerson is also very good. One of the points he makes and does it very excellently is, you know, we have real problems in this world and we can't afford to keep spending a huge amount of money on the military-industrial terrorism complex, who's so good at marketing terrorism that is not a real problem. You know, instead what we're ending up is a very expensive surveillance state that's really not accomplishing anything. And given the real risks and problems like Fukushima in the world, we have better things to do with the money. I'm not saying I like any of this, so I'm not saying, whoopee, we have a new high-tech economy. I'm not saying that I support abrogating trillions of dollars of retirement benefits or sort of renegotiating them. I'm not saying I like any of that. If anything, I've spent the last 20 years of my life trying to prevent it, and when I couldn't prevent it, trying to warn people. What I am saying, though, is that it's reality, and we're dedicated at the Salieri Report to looking at reality because we believe that that we can survive and thrive if we have an honest map of how the world works. So it is what it is, and there you have it. The divergence continues. Money and markets, two top stories this week, I would say, are Egypt and the continuing question of what's happening and what to do at Fukushima. We see riots and mass killings in Egypt this week. It's an example of the combination of the bust economy. These are folks who are really getting chewed alive by the debasement and the costs of food, etc. Commodities have been coming down sharply for a year or two, depending on which commodities you're talking about. For the most part, imagine if commodities were really running up, what things would be like. This is another example, and it's something that Colonel Wilkerson and I talk about in his interview, of what happens when the U.S. and G7 encourage regime change and sort of incoherence in a way that makes matters worse. On Fukushima, the reality is, from everything we can tell, that, you know, nothing is contained, and in fact, it's not clear anybody has a good idea how to contain it. And so we have a nuclear situation sort of melting down underneath Fukushima, but we also have the ocean being used to cool things down. And so continued contamination of the ocean. A lot of the seriousness of this has been papered over by Japanese monetary stimulus, which has been extraordinary. So it's papered over it for now, but there is continuing questions of how bad could this get? And when you think about it, this is only one of many such liabilities like this we could face around the planet. The U.S. Stock market traded off this week. We've been waiting for a summer correction for quite some time, and the market has really outperformed most people's expectations this year. It is surprising a little bit to see bonds trade off with stocks trading off, because normally what you do is you go to bonds. That's not happening. So big question, is the summer correction upon us? Are we finally going to get one? And if both are selling off, what does that mean to bonds? Some of what you're seeing is a cycling from U.S. stocks to Europe. Europe has certainly not as bad as those pumping U.S. equities have been trying to persuade American investors that Europe is. So, you know, that's a natural thing to have happen. Precious metals look stronger this week. They popped up today. I still don't think we have necessarily proved a bottom, so I would continue to be cautious. Unless you're a short-term trader. Commodities are also showing signs of life. The most important thing to watch is not stocks or the price of gold, it's interest rates. Interest rates continue to be in their long-term channel that has been coming down. They've been moving up, but it's entirely within the channel. If they go higher and break through that long-term channel, then you could see a lot change fast across all markets and globally. If it breaks higher or much higher, things could get dicey. I'm not saying that's necessarily going to happen, but again, if you're going to watch anything in these kind of markets, you want to watch interest rates because that's where the most treacherous action is going to be one way or the other. An important story that's not the kind of story that most people would notice, but I think a very important bellwether, is private mortgage insurers are back in the black. The article was up on the blog. It may be off the homepage at this point. That's a very important milestone. As you know, I believe that the housing finance was used, housing and mortgage system were used to pump and dump and move a lot of the money out of the legacy systems and into the new economy using fraudulent mortgage paper, and that we've seen quantitative easing and the bailouts used to now tear up that fraudulent mortgage paper that's choking up the system. The GSEs are back, back on their feet thanks to massive government subsidy. The banks are back on their feet. As you know, I think the Federal Reserve with QE3 really finished shredding up all the fraudulent paper. But now the private mortgage insurers are back on their feet and they're back in the black. And again, that's another sign that the leadership can go into the next phase with everyone free and clear that helped engineer that part of the bubble. And that part of the financial coup d'etat, you can now sort of cut the legacy systems loose. And that's why I keep talking about this lowering of the boom. A real sign of that transition, if you will, to this, increased divergence is an article in The Economist. I put it up on the blog with a little note this week. It's called Liberty's Lost Decade. And I take note of it because The Economist is one of those periodicals that I review looking for the official story from the top of the Anglo-American Alliance, so this is the official reality promoted. And when there's a turn being engineered, you're apt to kind of get the hint of it in The Economist early on. Now that 17 intelligence or U.S. intelligence agencies have helped us shift $40 trillion across from one to the other, it's time to put them all back in the box. And we see The Economist with a very powerful editorial saying, things have gone too far in America. The fortune being spent on authoritarian methods are really killing the goose that laid the golden egg. That's my words, not theirs. The reality is, if we're going to have a real move of any significance in the global or U.S. stock markets, tyranny and authoritarianism is very bad for long-term equity bulls. And so what you're watching is you're watching the pendulum swing back with the leadership saying, okay, all the people who helped steal that money need to get back in the box. And this thing has gone too far because we need to affirm, at least our official brand of democracy. We need to have an image of government that's good for markets. One of the things they do is lay some blame on Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld, which is more than perfect. As I said in my comment, they're too old to put in jail and too nuts not to get more mileage out of them. But Lord knows they certainly deserve it for leading the engineering of some of the most ridiculous policies present in the United States today. And Lord knows the greatest waste of money. Anyway, that's up on the blog if you want to read more. But I asked our wonderful audio video producer, Justin, to make a little slide. So if you're watching the slides on the webinar, please check it out. Don't blame me. It's all Dick and Don's fault. A prior Economist article had another big lie talking about the vibrant private sector as opposed to government, which is, sort of inefficient, corrupt, and wasteful. That's a big lie because the big problem in government right now is you have a military-industrial terrorist complex, which is a giant profit machine feeding corporate capacity that lacks a fundamental economic mission. And what needs to happen here is we need to redirect that capacity to address real problems and real solutions. Inspired by the challenge of that, I posted up a little blog post called Real Solutions, where I talk about my age-old commitment to something called the Solari model, which is how do you re-engineer government and private investment process to integrate system-wide analytics so that you're optimizing not just return to shareholders or taxpayers, but return to the total economy. As I've said many times, I think our current total wealth is about 1% of what it could be if you simply changed your investment allocation to something a little bit, something other than, giving friends fees to your friends and, you know, and centralizing control of anything in a way that destroys the culture and the economy. Another sign of lowering the boom, there's Kiplinger piece lately in their retirement newsletter on pension funds talking about how changes in laws are coming that will allow the sort of retirement benefits to be ratcheted down. So there's a great period 2014 and 2015 that we're going to go through where there's going to be lots of renegotiating and struggling with pension funds. And what I found is that because that's going on in general, it's very particular as to your pension system and specifically what's happening. So you need to be careful before you draw conclusions as to what that means to your particular retirement system. But you certainly need to, if you're depending on whether it's a private or public pension system, it's time to pay attention to what's happening to that system and to understand what it means to you. And as I said, it's a very granular situation. Nowhere was the legacy systems versus the new high-tech economy more visible this week than the squabble between Musk, the former founder of PayPal, now the head of Tesla Motors and SpaceX, and the builders of the California bullet train. Musk unveiled plans for a $10 billion Hyperloop. That's up on the blog. And I'm somebody who likes Musk. Lord knows he certainly has a very well-deserved success this year with Tesla, whose stock has been skyrocketing. And he's put forward a vision with SpaceX that I think, if you look at all the things he's doing, can really inspire a new generation. At the same time, the California bullet train builders, who are very much trying to get funding and finalize plans for something that's very much in the industrial model, poo-pooed Musk's plans for a maglev hyperloop that could go, I think, more than 800 miles an hour? Very fast. Now, I must tell you, given what's been being poured into underground facilities, I already believe they're running these underground. And so sometimes you'll hear me, I said with Farrell, how does the Secretary of State get from the East Coast to the West Coast in 2 hours? Well, I think, high-speed trains may be one of them. But it's very Orwellian to, on one hand, watch government abrogating obligations to people who are owed literally tiny amounts of money on mortgage workouts or housing subsidy, while we see contemplation of trillion-dollar space programs on high-speed maglev trains. But again, that's the kind of world we're living in. I give Musk a lot of credit for trying to inspire a new generation. If we're spending trillions and trillions of dollars on stupid war on terror programs that simply create profits for corporations who we really, who are doing functions we don't need, I, for one, would much rather spend it on a train that can go 300 or 800 miles an hour. So, I side with Musk. Another example of what I call the lowering the boom is something. I'll start off with telling you about one of my favorite movies. There's a movie, 1944 movie called Gaslight. Ingrid Bergman stars as the wife. Her husband tries to persuade her that she's crazy when she's not. And it gave rise to an expression, gaslighting somebody. And that's when you try and make them, drive them crazy when in fact they're quite sane and you're up to no good. Well, you're watching another part of lowering the boom is a financial gaslight. Just like you're saying, the intelligence infrastructure has to get back in the box and get reasonable. You need to do a beat down on the people who are owed money in the legacy system. So, the minority communities, in fact, do call it a beat down. You bring in the drugs and then you trumpet the fact that the people who live in the neighborhood are drug dealers and you blame them in the media. So it's another form of gaslighting. I did an interview with a radio show host this week who tried to attribute all of our financial problems to overpaid municipal workers and poorly managed pension funds. And then I noted someone sent me a link this week to truthinaccounting.org, which is a website dedicated to financial mismanagement, including at the municipal level. And it includes, as an advisor, David Walker, former U.S. Comptroller General, who is head of the Peterson Foundation, who's constantly running around and demanding financial accountability from the people who just had their money stolen, when in fact he was supposed to stop it from being stolen. Anyway, we're going to see more and more of these financial gaslight operations who come in and demand accountability from the people who are owed money and are completely silent on the trillions of dollars that have been engineered out and the incredible intentional top-down fraud. So some of them are well-meaning people. Some of them should really know better. But there it is. So be careful to blame municipal workers. With $4 trillion going missing from the federal government and then many trillions more on the bailouts, I assure you that, you know, all the corruption and mistakes on the part of municipal compensation systems don't even begin to compare with the kind of money that's been disappearing. The digital wars continue. We see several more secure email services in the United States shutting down, saying given what the government's doing, they can't commit to provide secure email services. We see there's an article up on the blog, every important person in Bitcoin just got subpoenaed by New York's financial regulator. The regulators are clearly trying to figure out, they're just trying to keep up and figure out what's going on and how they're going to control it. And we also see DOJ in the news. Two stories. The first, Eric Holder, who was so instrumental in engineering the explosion of the prison population in the 90s and 2000s, now as Attorney General, comes out and says, oh, we need to lower the prison population, so we're going to start recommending we change policies. It's the ultimate switch hit, and we put a little post up on the blog called The Prison Switch Hit to help you understand what's up. And one of the things I said, and, you know, I sound terribly horrible when I say this, but I think it's one of the incentives behind it. You know, you needed to round up those folks when you were gentrifying the neighborhoods. Now that the big institutions own all that, the real estate, and they're looking for rentals, now you can let them out. So if you're interested more, I think there are a number of things happening, one of which is the budget sequestration and the economic issues on the federal budget are going to at least bring some sanity. The other thing is we see indictment of two young J.P. Morgan traders in connection with the London Whale losses at J.P. Morgan Chase. We're following in the footsteps of the prosecution of Goldman of some young, very powerless guy, letting all the senior management in the organization skate. Now the Department of Justice is, you know, or the prosecutor in this case, is insisting that the criminal investigation is not open. That's a hint that, you know, if they make headway with this guys, they may propose a settlement where they squeeze them to get the guys upstairs, and then they move upstairs either to the J.P. Morgan Chase senior management or even corporate liability. So, I'm a skeptic, but we'll see. Our hero this week, it was amazing. all week long we kept proposing new people for the hero. So this week we literally have a hero queue. Our hero goes to Alfredo Moser, who is a mechanic in Brazil who invented the concept of taking plastic water bottles, adding a little bit of bleach to the water, and sticking them in the roof so that literally the sunshine could function like electricity. It's the ultimate in low-cost solar lighting, and he started doing it, and people started hiring him to do it for their houses. Then the next, you know, it took off, and it's providing daily lighting to just an enormous number of people. It's a very inspiring article, but it shows you how one person can come up with a tool that can make an extraordinary difference in the life of millions of people, improve the quality of living. So 2 points for him. Another story is Richard Parker, a race car designer who was born without arms, and nevertheless has managed to become a very successful car designer and just a very special, extraordinary person. And included in the video on the blog about Mr. Parker is his parents who brought him up in a way that he would be very successful and self-sufficient. And so it's a story of a very beautiful family. Another runner-up is Norway Prime Minister, who decided he really wanted to talk to people about what was going on. And so he went to work as a taxi cab driver in secret, and his only problem was in Norway, everybody knows what the Prime Minister looks like, so he got found out fairly quickly by most citizens. But it's a very charming story. So, as you can see, lots of excellent people doing lots of excellent things, and I think it's important to always remember that. Don't ever be around me and say, why is nobody doing anything? There are millions of people doing plenty. Ask Catherine a great question. Are you aware of Google Street View, where you can see 360-degree photographs of any street when you drag the little man onto Google Maps? Well, it turns out the next phase of this is when you browse Google Street View, you will be able to enter businesses and take an internal tour of the business. This is so chilling, you don't even know what to say about it. But apparently, Google is, maybe they'll have the smart meters figure out a way to film everything going on inside of our house. Who knows? Anyway, from San Diego, a question. In your opinion, will a lot of the bailout money paid to financial institutions never be paid back and just represent gifts or subsidies to them? Essentially, I think, you know, there were different kinds of bailout money, so there wasn't just one process. There were many multiple processes. At the end of the day, I see the bailouts as being essentially a giant gift. Now, there were parts under the TARP program where the Department of Treasury wanted a much wider group of banks borrowing, and so they literally strong-armed many banks, including those who didn't need it, to borrow money and then pay it back. So in that sense, you know, they were legitimate loans or investments, they were paid back. If you look at how a lot of the paybacks in these kinds of situations are engineered, they're engineered by what I call federal credit arbitrage, which is the bank is able to borrow short, lend long using the federal credit. You know, it's basically a profit machine. You just make very low risk or no risk profits. You use those profits to pay back. It's exactly what we saw going on in the 1990-91. If you read my article, The Myth of the Rule of Law, I kind of explain how it worked then. And we saw a lot of that going on. So you'll see banks, you know, the treasurers stand up and say, we were paid back. Well, you engineered all sorts of profits into them that gave them the wherewithal to pay back. So we're looking at a very hybrid and intimate structure where the two are joined at the hip. So, you know, the reality is, you know, to me, the majority of this was an enormous gift and subsidy. At the same time, that gift and subsidy financed a hole created by the fraud, and the fraud, my guess, is financed the black budget. So you steal a whole bunch of money, the money disappears where it's supposed to go, and then you've got to clean the mess up, you know. And so if you look at this at the highest level as a reengineering of government and a reengineering of the economy as a matter of policy, which I think it was at the highest level, you know, the banks were simply the vacuum cleaner, and now you're just emptying out the bag of trash. Let me just check the webinar software to see if we have any more questions. Wow, quiet night. Oh, there's one more. A GMO black swan. Since Whole Foods and even stores like Target have already indicated they are moving towards GMO labeling, there will be a tremendous business opportunity for the non-GMO producers and suppliers when the GMO black swan on labeling finally hits a wall. But there will obviously be major market supply issues. If this black swan occurs, when do you expect this to finally happen? No idea. The politics on this have gone global. Putin has sort of picked up on the fact that this is the greatest weakness in the Anglo-American alliance, and he is using this to hit hard. We see real pushback from Europe. So there's a war going on in this, which is quite deep. And if you look at the power and force on both sides, it's also quite deep. So I think it's very hard to predict, but I do think that this war is much more important and much deeper than it might look on the face of it. I was surprised. I was talking to some someone who's very conscious, who I like very much and care about very much, and they confessed to the fact that they were at a fast food restaurant eating GMO food. And I got upset because I said, do you really want your children to be sterile? And you could hear them freeze on the end of the line. So I think if any place, this is where the lines are going to get drawn. So I hate to predict other than to say that this is going to be very interesting and very important. We should all stay tuned. Okay, that's it. Only two questions on the webinar so far tonight. Okay, our interview this week is posted on the blog. It was funny. Somebody, one of our team said today on the roundup, they said, you know, on one hand today you're talking about cleaning your home or business, and then next week you're talking about what life looks like from the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And they said the contrast is quite remarkable. And interestingly enough, though, if you look at what we need to do to address all the problems that we're talking about, you know, from the point of view of Joint Chiefs of Staff, or we will be talking next week, you know, ultimately coming clean and turning around the culture and turning around the corruption has to happen one person and one household at a time. You know, somebody once said to me when I was Assistant Secretary of Housing, how do you rebuild the economy? I said, one child at a time. They said that takes too long. But in fact, that's how it works. My interview this week is one of the most remarkable people I've ever known and someone who I consider to be a very important ally and personal friend. And that is Eunice Boston, who runs one of the most... one of the preferred cleaning companies to the rich and famous in New York. Eunice, knowing Eunice and working with Eunice is a transformational experience. She is one of those people who brings magic wherever she goes. And she has a habit of attracting top executives out of Wall Street and the corporate world to clean with her. She's the person who taught me to clean. At one point, I had decided at Hamilton Securities that for somebody to have a senior executive position at Hamilton, they had to go clean toilets with Eunice for a week. But you have never seen the world until you've seen it through Eunice's eyes and the possibility of what could be. When Eunice comes into your life, she doesn't just clean up your house. She cleans up your attitude. She cleans up your health. She turns you around completely. And I don't want to give away the story, but Eunice Boston saved my life during the litigation. She was, you know, you learn when you go through periods like that and you stand up against the police state, you learn who's your real friend and who's not and who's fearless and who's not. And Eunice and her team stood. They continued to work by my side. And we tell the story in the interview of how they literally saved my life. And I think it's because when on a continuous basis, a group of people act with integrity and act with responsibility, it literally creates a force field that provides protection. There is a divine law operating in the universe, and most people really do respect the law. And so if you act, you know, with a lawful intent and with an intent to always be useful, it's amazing how many people will, you know, how many sort of secret allies there are. There were continuous efforts during that period in the 90s to falsify and frame evidence. And I can't tell you how many honest government workers just stood up and wouldn't let it happen and stopped it. So that force field is powerful. And people who come to me and are always asking, where can I go to get away from the danger? How can I protect myself from the risk? One of the things I tell them is, you know, there's not enough time in the world to protect you from all the risks operating. Instead, what you have to do is you have to say, okay, where is my purpose and where can I be useful and where can I add the most value to the people around me? Because in fact, that's where you create that force field. This one is important because this notion of coming clean, we all need to come clean. And the more we individually do come clean, the more power we can gather. And that's important because we all need power to deal with the situation. So interview with Eunice Boston. I drove up to outside of New York and met with her and two members of her team to do that interview because to me it was so important to capture it and so important that you hear the story, sort of the power of righteousness at work. And let's go to the movies to complement the interview with Eunice. I wanted to post an interview. It's a DVD that I love from Masaru Emoto, who is the head of the Hato Institute in Japan, who's done extraordinary research into the impact of our thoughts and words and intentions on water. To give you a taste of it, I put a segment from What the Bleep Do We Know, which is the documentary where many people learned of Emoto's work. Understanding the impact of our thoughts and words on water is very important to understand because water is such a big part of our bodies and the bodies of other living things. Water is integrated into everything in around us. And if water and the character of water can be affected by the way we treat each other and the way we think about ourselves and each other, it underscores the importance of a positive and healthy culture. And I think one of the reasons that Eunice and her team have had such extraordinary success in teaching people about a whole new way to clean a home that cleans not just the visible, but the invisible as well, is you're talking about a very spiritually evolved group of people who can get into a space and literally change the, you know, the crystals in the water and change the way the water is behaving within the space. To me, that's important because if you look at the every effort to encourage inhumanity and degradation in the media and in behavior around us, if you understand the impact that can have on people's minds, on their thoughts and their productivity, you're talking about something that's destroying the very human capital around us and destroying our power. It's something John Rappaport talks a lot about in his various pieces that he does on personal power and the power of imagination. I've seen, one of the things I've seen, sometimes doing it with Eunice, sometimes not, is what happens when you go into an organization and you begin to re-engineer that organization in a way that significantly improves or deteriorates the culture. And you can literally watch an extraordinary physical change. People become unrecognizable from the people you met when the re-engineering started, both for the good and bad. And that's why I think the interview with Eunice and the messages from water information combined with some of the interviews we've done with Tiller and McTaggart on the field and sort of the nature of what's happening electromagnetically around us are all very, very valuable interviews to help you think about how reality really works and why it's so important in the areas of our life where we have control or influence, we use this knowledge to create for ourselves the world we would like to create for ourselves and our family and those we love and the wider whole. And but I believe Emoto's research really does describe one of the reasons why Eunice and her team have such a powerful impact on people and places. And I'm always stunned when I discover other business people who are allowing strangers who they don't know and they don't know what their values are into the most intimate parts of their business to clean at night. I used to always say, we have millions of dollars in the software, please. The only people we're going to let into this space are warriors who truly know how to watch our back. And because I took that position and spent the money to do that, I am alive today. So I recommend the philosophy to you. Okay, that's it for this week. In closing, coming up next week, strategic issues facing the U.S. military, warfare in the 21st century, a wonderful interview with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, former chief of staff to Colin Powell as Secretary of State, and the sort of the most prominent man who's who's called Dick Cheney on the carpet more than anybody, a man with a very distinguished career in the military and a professor now at the College of William and Mary on national security issues, and constantly drawn back in by the powers that be to do policy papers or analysis on what's happening with the military and a very, very, I think, capable assessment of what the issues are before the military today. I would note up on the blog a recent survey from Pew on who's the most respected groups in America. At the very bottom, not surprisingly, is lawyers. At the top, the military. And one of the things we talk about is, given what's going on, can that last? August 29th, John Rappaport is back for his report, and then September 5th, in anticipation of the new rules coming in October or November from the SEC, I'm going to be talking with you about crowdfunding. Very important topic. So until August 22nd next week, please remember, ladies and gentlemen, do not worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck. It's my pleasure today to welcome to the Soleri Report Eunice Boston, who is a very dear friend and ally. And I'm going to introduce you to Eunice and her company, EBT Associates, by reading a letter that I wrote many years ago. So let me begin. Since 1987, I have looked to you and EBT Associates to make sure that all my places are wonderful. You have managed my homes and my offices. You have moved me, decorated me, catered me, and cleaned and spring cleaned all my apartments and houses, as well as my company's offices for many years. The quality of the service has been so extraordinary that I asked you to set up a company and a team in Washington to handle our work when we started a company in Washington. All of EBT Associates' services are excellent. Each specific task is done well. Every effort is made to understand what I want accomplished and to ensure that I get the result I want. What always astonishes me is how you and your team manage to see many opportunities that I did not see to make our lives more comfortable, so the results are always better than I envisioned possible. What is particularly remarkable is the quality of your team. They are nice. They are intelligent. They are people of character and integrity. How many times have I come home to find the money left in my jean pockets that was put in the wash, laid out, and dried neatly on the table? How many times have I felt safe because it was EBT Associates working at nights and watching over our proprietary computers, databases, and confidential information? How many times has your team communicated the importance to the people around me and who work for me, how much I care about them, and the safety and well-being of the environment in which they work together? I appreciate so many things about what you have done for me. In 20 years of business, I've never had a partner or a company that worked for us add so much value so consistently as you and EBT Associates. You are dedicated to the total success of the people and companies that you serve so excellently. You enjoy their success truly. You give tremendous energy wherever you go. And so with that, Eunice Boston, welcome to the Soleri Report, and could you introduce your two wonderful colleagues that have joined us here today?
Thank you, Austin, and thank you for the opportunity to have us here with you today. Millie Palmer and Courtney McFarker, you can say hello.
Hi, this is Millie.
Hi, this is Courtney.
And so, Eunice, walk us through it. What is cleaning?
What is cleaning?
What is cleaning? And why is it so transforming? Our title today is Transforming Through the Power of Cleaning. So what is cleaning and why is it so transforming?
Cleaning is a transformation. It's a self-expression. It's you call it a dedication to oneself, one's awareness, your space, your environment, and the way you live, and you want to clean it. And by cleaning, I mean cleaning. Not spraying scents, not pushing the dirt under the rug, but cleaning. Rolling up your sleeves, getting down, and cleaning. when you clean, you pretty much walk into each room in your home, house, wherever you live, and you assess. The best way to do it is to assess each room. Look at it from a perspective of what do I need to clean today? What's dirty? And you may think it's clean, but as you look at things like the moldings and the baseboard and the dust that's collected here and there, then you'll see your perception will change in terms of what you need to do.
So in my experience, because as you know, I've had many years of, I used to think that I liked cleaning until I met you, mm-hmm. and you completely reinvented what cleaning meant to me mm-hmm. and how I approached it and saw it. But cleaning is both, if you look at your material space, so if you look at your walls, if you look at your furniture, your stuff, the cleaning you're talking about is a much deeper and higher standard of cleaning. So you're not just talking about the things, cleaning the things you can see, you're talking about cleaning everything, whether it's visible or, you know, inside the closets. So it's a much higher standard of cleaning. But in my experience, you're also talking about something else, which is cleaning the invisible space. In other words, I believe that places have souls. So you're talking about cleaning a place energetically. You're talking about cleaning the whole field. So maybe if you could talk about that.
Okay, you talk about cleaning the entire space, and I usually say we take care of the whole person. Mind is mind, body, spirit. Mm-hmm. Okay? And your homes, your places where you live, take on the energy of what lives in it. Good, bad, indifferent, high, low, whatever. Their energy, their fields of energy. When you clean, what are you're trying to fuse the two together, the magnetic fields of energy, and bring them, harmonize them with you as a person, as an individual, as a soul, and you want your space and you to be one. Mm-hmm. So one way to do that is by cleaning, like totally detailing, like going over your surfaces inside, cabinets, underneath things, just unearthing all of that stuff. Because as you unearth it, you're lightening up your environment, you're lightening up the space, you're allowing a whole different energy to come into where you live and totally transform.
I used to try and explain to people what you did, mm-hmm. and finally you and I came to a realization. You would let me buy people a gift certificate, yeah. and you would go do a deep cleaning of their house, and one of my partners called me afterwards in a state of complete transformation, and she said, "Why didn't you tell me that this is not just a cleaning, this is an entirely spiritual experience?" So that isn't that what you're meaning, that sort of cleaning and realigning somebody with their space?
Yeah, most definitely. And the other thing is, like, for each individual, it's a different experience. Some people would say it's like a day at the spa, because they said the cleaning or the house or apartment cleaning. One guy said, "I felt like you totally sparkling my whole space. It was like a day when I'm at the spa where you do your face and everything." He said, "That's pretty much what you did to my apartment." He said, "I tried to burn sage, do everything, it just didn't feel right. But you came in and you cleaned it, and the energy, transfers of energy, right. different fields of energy that makes that space becomes totally different."
Okay, so let's ask Millie and Courtney. Okay, Millie, what is cleaning?
To me, cleaning is a transformational pursuit for everyone that's involved, whether you are the one doing the cleaning or the one receiving the cleaning. It is not just removing the dirt and grime. It is a deeper activity that is transformational and enlightening and uplifting on every level. It is hard to articulate the response, the feeling of joy and delight that comes over someone once their space has been cleaned. You must experience it for yourself, the kind of cleaning that we are talking about today. It is not just, you know, general cleaning, hit or miss. It is going deeper into the crevices, the corners, the forgotten spaces, which is really a reflection of our own self, our own inner state, our own states of being.
Okay, Courtney, what is cleaning?
To clean for someone is to offer the utmost support that enhances that person's life. It is a partnership, and like any partnership, the relationship must be positively cultivated if it's to remain healthy and robust. It is a noble profession. It is very hard physically, mentally, and emotionally. But more than anything else, what cleaning does, it offers both the cleaner, which is us, and the person that we're cleaning up at the end of the day to say, I got it.
Mm-hmm. It's Eunice once described, she said, you know, all the space within your home is alive, it's living. So I think of it as kind of re-energizing your entire life space. Okay, let's talk about the difference that cleaning has made in people's lives. And I have a doozy of a story, but we'll start with you. What's the difference that it makes to people when they discover what can happen when you have a really clean house?
It's transformation. It's changing one's vision, that once they've experienced it, then everything they look at is with a different vision. It's like getting brand new glasses. Oh, I didn't realize that was everything. Looks different.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually say to people, once you've experienced it, you can't go home again.
Mm-hmm.
You could never settle back to that complacency of state as before, because it's download. It's downloaded in your consciousness. It's in the way you look, the way you speak, and it comes into your life, into your being, and you're suddenly like alive in a different way.
I think a lot of us think that the way to make a space beautiful is to buy stuff. So is to buy fancy furniture or to have an expensive house. And they don't understand that part of making a space beautiful is this cultivation of what I call the field or the energy within a place. So part of making your place wonderful and part of making it just unbelievably clean is understanding that the field and the energy within a space is real, and you have to pay attention to it, just like you need to paint your walls. You have to cultivate the field.
And it's all about love. It's done with love. If you bring love to it, to what you do, to the way you clean a space, to the way you clean the toilet, it's like a love affair. And I had one client, she said, I don't know how she does it, but it's about love. It's all about love. It's that love thing she does.
Mm-hmm.
And so I invite you to love your space. Get intimate with your space. Create a love affair with your neglected spaces. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like any relationship. If you don't cultivate it, you have a plant, you don't water it, it just dies. So your space, dead, neglected, flat line. You come in, it's beautiful, but it's there. It's just there. But once you clean it, it starts to vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
It laughs. It lips and fuse. It's just wonderful.
So what was it Millie was saying? You said you were talking to the table?
Oh. Well, from the standpoint that everything is energy, everything is conscious. And the if you look at the table, we are sitting at this table that is serving us unconditionally. Mm-hmm. Unconditionally. It doesn't demand anything from us. It gives itself totally. So we are inspired. We have to be inspired to take care of this table and give it our all as well. So cleaning it properly is part of that relationship, that dance, that lifts everything to a higher ground.
I have a wonderful radio show host. Sometimes I'll do things with called Caroline Casey, and she says, take your home and over time reorganize how you decorate your home so that everything in it was made by a person you know or came from someone you know, and so that you create a much higher level of intimacy.
Because I believe that person's essence is in that piece,
right,
in that creation. Somebody's hard work and effort and love went into creating it. So absolutely, that's real and that's alive.
Right.
Yes.
Right. It's funny, I have two friends who are sisters, and one has very low energy and one is very high energy. And they can make the same soup with the same exact recipe, and they taste entirely different. One is full of vitality and life, and the other's flat. It's the strangest thing.
Yes.
But that's what we're talking about.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I also think that it's important to connect your space to yourself, that the space is a reflection of you. And if you are not in a happy place within yourself, that's going to be reflected in the space in which you live.
Right.
So the cleaning of the space is like cleaning away the cobwebs within your own being.
Right.
And the two go hand in hand.
Right. So, Courtney, what's the difference that cleaning has made in people's lives? What's the difference it can make?
Let me just first say that Eunice is a master at what she does. I mean, I've learned the many uses of vinegar, which to this day I use quite a bit, both in cooking as well as in cleaning. No one else on the planet is as detail oriented as Eunice. And my takeaway from that over the years as I watched her is to realize that a lot of the cleaning that I was doing for other people, I was also doing it on the inside of myself.
Right. You can't clean the outside without it changing the inside.
Absolutely.
Right. Are you ready to tell the Hamilton story?
Go right ahead.
Okay, so when I started the company in Washington, I asked Eunice if she would start a subsidiary and recruit people to do a company, basically a team of people in Washington to handle our company. And so I went to our wonderful chief financial officer, and I explained to him, I said, I know the property management company will clean the offices for X, but I want to pay 4x and recruit a top company. And I should just say, Eunice is somebody who regularly does celebrities and famous people and well-known institutions, so this was a big deal to get her to start a team in Washington. So we're going to pay 4x as much, and we're going to get this person because one of the things I impressed on him is we're making very significant investments in our computers and software, and we leave at night, and then the folks who come in and do the cleaning and the facilities management are alone with all this stuff. We need people who we can trust who will watch our backs, because you bring the wrong people in, you could lose everything. So this is a security issue. We need people of great integrity. And if you look at our office, we had very beautiful open offices. We won the American Institute of Architects for Advanced Facilities Design, and they would only work if they were super clean. So Brian
trusted me, said, okay, I'll try it. And I'll never forget, because we had done the construction, and we had an investment banker who I would say was now one of our most enlightened people. And this is one of my favorite Millie stories, because she came in and the investment banker looked up and said, you know, who are you? And then, oh, right, you're the cleaning company, you're here to clean. And Millie said, no, we're here to bring the light. I'll never forget it. But it was a year later, we were sitting at a board meeting, and the chief financial officer, we're going through the budgets, and one of the people on the audit committee said, you know, I'm looking at our facilities management budget, and it's much more than what the property manager would charge us, and so I think we should think about using the property management. And Brian had a year of partners of EBT associates and said, absolutely not. And, you know, because by then he understood exactly what we were talking about. And it was very interesting to watch. And so you became an integral part of the company, and the facilities manager you recruited to run it was your nephew, right. Ozzy. And Ozzy, among other things, was a chef.
Yeah.
And Ozzy would cook on the weekends, and he would bring the food in on Monday, and we never had an absentee. No one was ever sick on Monday. It was quite... But from the time Ozzy started to bring food and stock the kitchen, no one ever got sick at Hamilton Securities Group. It was quite amazing. Anyway, so let me fast forward and tell the story of what happened during the litigation.
Okay.
Remember that?
Yeah.
How could you forget? So the Department of Justice, and this, what I'm going to tell everybody now is the story of how Eunice Boston and her company literally saved my life.
Okay.
Do you agree?
Yes.
Yeah, amen. You do. Okay, so the Department of Justice seized the offices, and they had control for over a week. And what happened? I'll ask Courtney. You remember. What happened?
I remember Ozzy and I, we were in the back hallway on the staircase, and we noticed that there were garbage thrown everywhere. You could smell the smell of pee, and on the top stairwell, somebody also did a number two. And at that point, I was pushing back hard against not even wanting to go any further, but because of who Eunice is and the job that we're there to do, I nevertheless tied a handkerchief around over my face and went about cleaning it up.
So they had really intentionally tried
yes.
to... And it's hard to imagine because these offices were so sort of clean and pristine and beautiful, but they had really tried to destroy it.
They trashed it, yes.
They trashed it. They put cigarette butts in the carpet. They'd thrown food around. They'd thrown garbage around. And as you said, they had done other scatological things. But when we looked at the office, I realized we have to clean it. You know, we cannot leave the offices this way. We cannot let that stand. And so I called Eunice in New York, and I said, you have to send. It was like the scene from The Godfather when he says, I need you to use all your powers. And so you came in, and Courtney was part of that team, and we cleaned you cleaned the whole space. And I remember it was an incredible job. It was a very difficult job. And when it was over, the property manager who worked for the property management company came in, and he looked at it, and he was stunned because he thought he was going to have to clean it up. And he said to Ozzy, I want you to call Austin and have her bring her lawyer in. I want to give her attorney an affidavit. And so I brought my attorney in, and it turns out that the team from the HUD Inspector General's office had tried to falsify information when they were in the office. They had gotten the property manager to take them downstairs, get an empty shredding bin. We had a shredding service, but we weren't using it because of the subpoenas. We were keeping all of our trash. They brought the shredding bin upstairs, and they opened the garbage bags, put garbage in the shredding, and then took accounting files out of the corporate files, put it on top, took the bin downstairs, and started taking pictures. And he said to the attorney, you can't do that. That's falsified. And she said to him, shut up. It's none of your business. And then she sent us a letter saying, by seizing the office, they had caught us shredding accounting records. You know, they'd caught us doing something. And they were trying to frame us on an obstruction of justice charge. And his affidavit was turned into the court, and it stopped the whole thing dead. And in fact, it's very interesting. Later, when she failed to frame us, she had to resign and leave. I don't think I ever told you the job she got. She got put in charge of the ethics committee for the Bar Association in D.C. Wow. Really? But, yeah, no, it's pretty scary. But I absolutely believe that if it hadn't been for your company and what you did, that I would have been ended up in jail on a framed charge or dead. So, you know, I've always believed that that the cleaning, and it was interesting, when we finished the cleaning that time, there was a prayer circle and we blessed the space. I don't know if you remember. But it was as though there was a spiritual covering on the space and the whole enterprise that made that, you know, what was really a very demonic effort to frame us, it just failed.
What power clean. Power clean. But I don't want to forget something very important. Cause this is our second take, and we left out some stuff that was very important. Millie and Courtney, they came in from a financial background. Millie from Wall Street, Courtney from trying to get people to...
Corporate,
okay. And so it's been like a journey of letting go of what we know, what we think we know, or the ego, in order to do this and to sign on for this work that's hard, that's brutal, that some days would take you places you don't want to go.
Uh-huh.
But to rise above all of that and stand firm in integrity and survive this, it's awesome.
Well, that's perfect, because let's talk about what it's like to do cleaning as a practice. So Millie and I come from very similar backgrounds on Wall Street, and I know, but both you, Millie, and Courtney come from a corporate background. So you meet Eunice and you leave a very corporate background to a very entrepreneurial background of doing cleaning. What's that like? How'd that happen? Tell us the story.
It wasn't because I chose it.
Good answer.
It sort of just...
You were drafted.
Drafted. I definitely didn't choose it in the sense that I set out to do it. But Eunice and I were friends, and shortly after I had left my corporate position on Wall Street, we were having breakfast, and she was in a bind. She was short-staffed that day, and she asked me if I would help her out. And she needed someone, and that person was me, to go uptown right at that moment. Once we left the restaurant, I had to head uptown. She wanted me to head uptown to clean the office of one of her clients, and I was specifically asked to clean the bathroom, the kitchen, and to throw out the garbage at every single desk. And the moment was definitely surprising. Let's say that. It was definitely surprising. But in that moment, I knew I was being tested. I knew it was a test of everything that I had thought of myself to be. And I had just embarked on a spiritual path, and I knew that there was no other answer that I could give her but yes. And so that was the beginning of working with Eunice, which has spanned over a decade. And it was definitely part of my spiritual work, my spiritual journey. it became a metaphor for my own inner cleaning, for cleaning up my own stuff, for working through the issues that I was working through at the time. And the process transformed me. It just accelerated my growth in terms of working on the ego issues. Here I was a corporate vice president for a major investment banking firm, and now I'm cleaning toilets. So it's you know what I can describe it as. Cleaning was the grain of sand inside of the oyster, and through that process, that irritation, it formed the pearl.
Can you tell the story about the ashram?
Oh, yeah. I had just met my spiritual teacher who has an ashram in upstate New York, and I would go up on the weekends and for special events. And at the ashram, everyone is assigned service. It's called seva, but it's selfless service. And on this particular trip, my seva was to sweep the back stairway with another person. Two of us were assigned to that particular seva. And we are sweeping, and it's, I think it was three floors. And then we got to the bottom floor, and we did not have a dustpan. And the dirt had accumulated, and we are looking around trying to figure out what next to do, what do we need to do. And my saver partner turns to me and says, "Let's sweep the dirt under the rug."
So she didn't understand.
She definitely did not understand, but I knew. Oh my God, you're at the ashram. You're going to sweep the dirt under the rug. I was like, I knew that was definitely not what this was about, because service at the ashram was always deeper than just the process of cleaning. And the same thing applies to Eunice and her work. It's not just about the cleaning. It goes so much deeper. But I thought that was a metaphor, was a very symbolic moment of how we tend to sweep things under the rug as opposed to going the whole way, you know, to clean up our stuff.
See, I think, because it's a metaphor for what's been happening financially. We keep sweeping it under the rug,
yes,
and sweeping it under the rug and sweeping the rug. And we think because you can't see it that it's really not there. But it is there.
But it is there, yes.
And just like the dirt in your house that you can't see affects your field, it affects your health. You know, it's a metaphor for the whole thing. That's why,
yes,
you know, our theme this year on the Solaire Report is coming clean. And the one thing, Eunice used to tell me, I can't save the whole country, but at least I can get in your house and clean them up one at a time. And I saw it as sort of a conspiracy to turn around the corruption one family at a time.
Yes.
You know, you clean up their house, and maybe you can take their mind up, and you can start to transform the country one dirty house at a time.
If I might say, just interject here about the financial aspect of the work, when you said four times more. Uh-huh. There's cleaning, and then there is Eunice's cleaning. And no amount of money will ever compensate her for what she does. So it doesn't matter what she's given. It's never going to be enough for what she brings to the moment and to the client and to the experience.
Well, people used to walk into Hamilton and they would go, wow.
Yes.
You know, because the field was...
Yes.
The energy.
Sparkle
the energy, yes.
And the energy.
Yes.
And it was like a magic. And people think you can only have that if you're very wealthy and there's something magical and you have to buy a Monet to get that. You know, they don't understand what creates that magic.
Yes, yes.
And anybody can have it, but it does take concentration. You have to look at the field and you have to say, okay, we're going to get the field here to sparkle.
Yes. Well, that's why we ultimately refer to it as a special magic, because that's really, there's no other way of describing it.
Right.
Right. Yes.
I just want to echo something that Mila said earlier, and that is this. I didn't chose this. It chose me.
He said he was minding his own business.
Yes, yes.
And I entered and broke through that wall. And there I was.
See, well, it's also very misleading to believe that cleaning is, you know, it's very easy to do, because it's not. I mean, there are days when physically, mentally, emotionally, even spiritually, I'm tested.
Right.
You know, this act of just vacuuming or wiping down a piece of furniture or even doing the bathroom, sometimes physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, God, is this it?
Well, if you walk into a space which is very dead or very dirty or very corrupt, there is a whole energy which is draining. You know, there's a drain going on, and to dig that out and clean it out is energetically exhausting. I mean, it's really I've encountered fields like that, and literally you can become paralyzed. You can't walk, you can't move. It's so exhausting.
But, you know, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say that I always say to Eunice, this is my thought and my thing, that cleaning is her ministry.
It is a ministry.
Because what she does is she resurrects dying and dead spaces and bring them back to life. With her love, with her integrity, with her hard work, with her focus, with every part of her being. That's what she does. And with her artistry, because she has, well, she has transformed cleaning into an art form, and that's what she does.
When I travel around, I travel a lot, and I stay with people, and they invariably like to cook, and I'm always the cleaner. I'm always the person who says, oh, I'll do the dish. I love to clean. You know, I've never been a cooker. So, but what I've discovered is Eunice doesn't think of myself as trained, but I do. And so, ever since, you know, sort of being around Eunice and understanding what she does, I think of cleaning as something which is very powerful. I think it as a way of getting and gathering and sharing power. And most people think of cleaning as something that's just
lowly.
It's a chore.
Negative, it's a chore, yes.
And so I was reading, Millie wrote a beautiful piece that we're going to put up on the blog post about Eunice and her company, but there were three words you used which I thought was perfect, because that's now my experience. I get a lot of energy from cleaning. I like to clean. And the three words you used are sacred, noble, and mysterious. Because once you envision everything in a place as being intelligent and alive, and you're engaging with those things and you're energizing them, it's a whole different thing. It's a whole different, and it's very powerful.
Yes, it is.
And some spaces do not want to be cleaned.
Oh. That's true. Yes.
No, we've had, like, where the energy, you walk in and it's so bad that you're drained, you can't even function mentally. I know this one particular job we did, and things, we weren't touching anything, they just kept falling over. And there was a young lady on the crew who was like talking back, and she started laughing. I said, it's not funny. She said, well, Eunice, what do you want me to do? If I don't make light of this and make, you know, she said, I'll lose my mind. So I have to, because the person, the energy in here don't want to be clean.
So I used to try and explain to people what you did, and I finally realized I'm just going to buy them a gift certificate. I'm just going to arrange for them to have a really deep cleaning by EBT and Associates. And I'm sure that my one dear friend William won't mind me telling the story, because William has a beautiful family, but he and his wife both work. They had three kids, and they just let the whole situation get away from them. And finally, I said, okay, I'm just, you know, we're going to kickstart you with a spring cleaning. And I asked you and your team, how many people did you bring?
Eight.
Eight people. And you came in. Now, I know that wasn't the worst job you ever had, but it was...
It was pretty much close to
it's one of the worst.
One of the worst. It's up there with one of the worst, yeah. Because I tell you...
Eunice, let me just say this real quick. Austin, and that job, I swear on my mother's grave, I wanted to quit. Because when I walked in...
I remember seeing your face, Courtney. Your face was...
When I walked in...
It was a tough job.
But what was so amazing after that 2.5 days is when his wife came and she looked me in the eye and she said, "You know what? Thank you for getting intimate with our house. It will never ever be the same again."
Right. It's like an intercession.
Yeah.
And once you've had the experience of it,
yeah.
You see through different lens, if you will. Mm-hmm. You just see life differently.
And
right? Yeah.
What I remember from that job, it was so hard that we got there and everybody did. I thought they were going to do something like, "You really done it this time?" And they're looking at me like, "Mean, what do we do? Where are we supposed to start?" And at that point, I had not a clue myself. But out of my mouth, I don't know where it came from, came, "Treat it like a palace."
Oh, I remember that. Treat it like a palace.
And that, everything changed after I said
that. But that was divine inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Treat it like a
palace.
What,
that's at the heart of this. That's at the heart of this.
Right.
Yes.
And she wrote me a beautiful letter, but I remember to this day some of the words she said, "You cleaned away our dirty, grimy secrets, but you left us with our dignity."
Wow. Yeah, beautiful. And they're a beautiful family.
Yeah.
And that's a nice little house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think because it speaks to the more, it's nothing is what it appears to be. There's always more going on than meets the eye.
Right. Right. And I think what I find many people in America don't understand is you can have a very modest house, but if you cultivate the field, it can be very beautiful. You don't need a lot of money. Now, you need to take
that's
the
true.
Time. You need to take the time, or you need to get Eunice to take the time. But you need to cultivate the field. Okay, so I'm listening to this. I hear this. What should I do? Now, I just want to point out, I'm going to put your email address up on the subscriber space on the blog post. So if somebody's in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, they can get you.
Yeah.
If they're willing to negotiate to fly you into Singapore, they can do that. But not everybody can fly you to Singapore. So I'm listening to this. I'm 3,000 miles away. What should I do?
It's like a look and see. Like, look at your space from a whole different way of looking. Like, just... look at what's around you. See how it
feels.
Like
it's a palace.
Yeah. Look at things that you haven't looked at before, or you thought you cleaned your bathroom, but all you did was spray that that stuff that doesn't clean anything. Need to get the scrub brush and the Q-tip and really get down and roll and get down and get it done. But once you start looking at your physical space, then bit by bit, you're going to see what needs to be changed, what needs to be cleaned. And it's a willingness to do it and do it the right way.
Can I add something to that?
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're in Singapore and you feel within your heart that this is something that must be done, that you have to do, if you are not able to do it yourself, just that knowing will draw to you the support.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. If you are truly looking to make that change, the universe is going to rush in and support you. And you will find the help. You will find the
person.
One
of the things I find it much easier to clean your house than mine. Because my house is full of my psychic garbage, whereas
I'm not. And that's a good point.
So I think people should get together and have parties. So this weekend we clean my house, next weekend we clean your house. We, so that you don't have to do it alone, because I think it's hard to do it alone.
Well, if you can get that movement together, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. We have something called Solari Circle, so
that would be fantastic.
You can invest money together, you can watch a documentary, but you can clean each other's house.
Yes.
I was going to say, it's just like you're saying, it's so much easier to clean someone else's house than your own. And
right.
that's just how it is.
Yeah.
So this party, it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Let's get it started.
And you said, like the yellow cab said, we just, what was that?
We'll go anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we're not yellow, we go anywhere?
Yeah, we're not yellow, we go anywhere.
And just for the fun of it, if you're in Singapore or California or wherever you are, you fly your decorators in because it's a nice conversation to say, well, guess what? I just had my decorator flying from New York. Well, you got the A1 hit list squad.
Okay, EBT Associates, you will never be the same. Eunice, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the Salary Report and for all your years of amazing experiences, and most of all for saving my life. That was very appreciated. And I should just mention, in a situation like that, many, many people are afraid. They run away, but you weren't afraid. You sent a team right in there, and your team wasn't afraid. I want to know why that was. How come you're fearless when everybody else is running? You're fearless.
Well, it's love and commitment and believing in you and loving you as a person. Then fear, there's nothing to be afraid about.
And last but not least, we were divinely inspired.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
So, love Perfect. You. Thank you for, and I find over the years what you've done is make me climb the tree and go up to the tallest branches, say, don't worry, you could come down. And I'm like, and I have to figure out a way. Okay, this is where I am. This is what I need to do. But you've always done that because of your faith in me and the way you see, like that time you had us do your house. Have the floors done, change the hardware.
Which house was that?
That was that Woodley place, the last one there.
Fraser Court.
And you said, Ozzy, you and Ozzy, I need the floors finished, satin finish. I need chrome fixtures on my doors and chrome handles. I need this done, and this is the paint I need. So you go there, you get somebody in.
Go figure it out.
Go figure it out.
Yeah, Austin, you had a phrase back then. What was that phrase? She'll come in and just say, well, it's like it's not in sync. But you had a one-word phrase.
Accord?
No. Another one.
Aligned?
No. What was it again?
What's your uncle used to say it all the time?
No, Austin.
I know, but her uncle used to say it.
So where? Every time Blair. she'll come by Fraser Court and something is out of sync, she'll use that one word. You know, this go make it right.
I don't remember.
Okay, I'm gonna ask Ozzy. It was just one word, but it means out of alignment. It's not in alignment or it's not in sync.
Uh-huh.
But you constantly use that phrase over and over. You'll come by and you take a look and say, you know, that's not one word. I'm going to ask Ozzy, because I used to use that word a lot.
That was a beautiful house.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, anything else? Any other insights? Okay, Eunice Boston, thank you for being on the Salary Report.
Thank you for having me.